24 hours a day for the last 10 years. Please consider donating to your favorite pirate radio station by making a check payable to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or just FRSC, mail it to P.O. Box
7811,
Santa Cruz, California 95061. You could also PayPal through our website, www.freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. Freak Radio Santa Cruz, help us. Your help. Help us. Again, make all checks payable to FRSC and mail them into P.O. Box
7811,
Santa Cruz, California 95061, or PayPal at freakradio.org. Freak Radio Santa Cruz needs your help. Help us.
You're all going to die. Didn't mean to remind you of it, but it is on your schedule. Yes, probably won't happen when you want. Usually comes along when you're not expecting. Generally, you have your stamp collection out, you know.
Now?
No. Just want a little time to put away your hinges, you know. No. There's a time to die, and it's okay, you know. It's really okay. Nobody wants to die. Nobody. Well, you know, most people don't want to die. Nobody wants to die. Boy, if you think being sick is no fun, dying is really a pain in the ass. Nobody wants to die. People don't mind being dead. Being dead is great. But getting dead, nobody wants to get dead. So I hope I don't die. I wonder how often we think that, you know? It's just under the surface, isn't it? You go out for the day, going out of your house. I hope I don't die. It'd really spoil the circus if I were to die. Geez, I hope I don't die. Comedians don't want to die. It's only a metaphor, but it's so true of all of us. We don't want to die out there. The comics want to die. I don't want to die. Geez, I was dying out there. I was dying. It was death out there. And it was like a morgue. Oh, I don't want to die. Of course, if the comedian doesn't die, you know, if he succeeds, if he makes you laugh, then he can say, I killed him. I killed him. So it's either me or you, you know. Just like on the freeway. Yeah, dying shouldn't be that bad. It shouldn't be that bad. We're all going to do it. It's one of the few fair things in life. Everybody catches it once. And dying should be fun. There should be some sort of a look ahead. I mean, after all, when you die, you're going to find out where you go. Haven't we been wondering about that a long time? Where the hell we go? Isn't that the biggest thing we have to wonder about? Where the hell do you go? I don't know. Joe thinks he knows. I know Joe thinks he knows, but Joe don't know. Where do we go? Nobody know. Well, I think sometimes you go where you think you're going to go. Whatever you think you're going to do, that's where you're probably going to go. If you keep saying you're going to go somewhere, chances are you might go there. You ever hear those guys say, I'm going to hell, don't pray for me. Don't pray for me, I'm going to hell. He is. You go where you want to go. I think when you die, your soul goes to a garage in Buffalo. When Monty Hall dies, he'll go behind door number 4. That's it, where you want to go. No, nobody wants to die. And you know, part of the reason we don't want to die is because of that goddamn funeral. We've seen it. We know how bad news it is. That funeral is no fun. Man, if I don't like other people's funerals, I know I'm not going to like my own. There's no way I can get behind my own funeral. Going to be lying there in a casket. They're going to put me in the box. Going to put me in a convertible with a top down. You know that's embarrassing, lying there. And everybody's looking at you. You're dead. And they're looking. You're just lying there still. People coming over going. They don't know that you're lying there with short pants on and no back in your jacket.
embarrassed.
And sometimes they'll come over, you know, some people, it depends on your religion and so forth, but they do come right over to the casket a lot of times and they'll go like this. And they're silent for a moment. And what they're doing while they're silent is they're subtracting their age from your age. So they get a rough estimate on what they have left. And they get up and they say, "Don't he look good? Don't he look good? You crazy? He's dead." "I know, but he never looked that good." "Oh, they say the nicest things about you. They say the nicest things when you die. Your popularity goes straight up when you die. They say the greatest things there are that can be said. They'll even make stuff up if they have to." "Well, he was a real asshole, but he meant well, you know? The well-meaning asshole." "Yes, you get so popular when you die. All the flowers you get. Think of the flowers you get when you die. You get more flowers when you die than you got in your whole life. All your flowers arrive at once, too late." The guys will say, "Oh, yeah, well, you know, Bill is dead. Yeah, poor Bill. Poor Bill is dead, yeah. Poor Dave? Yeah, poor Dave is gone now. Ed? Yeah, poor Ed is gone. Dan? That motherfucker is still alive, isn't he? I wish he would die so I could like him." Reincarnation is another aspect of death, and a lot of people will tell you little tales about it. Reincarnation, coming back. A lot of folks are sure of it. They can come back. You come back as something, I don't know. Does it seem right to you that it would work? I mean, mathematically, it doesn't seem to work. Because originally on this earth, we only had, well, let's say 6 people. I know we had 2, but it's a controversial number. Let's say at one time there were only 6 of us, about. 6 people, 6 souls. And those 6 people died, and those souls went back to the staging area. And new people were born, and those 6 souls came back. We still only have 6 souls. Now we have 4 billion people claiming to have souls. Where are all these extra souls coming from? Someone is printing up souls. And it lowers their value. The more souls there are, the less they're worth, it would seem. Well, somebody's got to think of this shit, you know. How about the perfect murder? I've thought sometimes about the perfect murder. You know what you do? You pick up one person by the ankles and you beat another person to death with him. And they both die and there's no murder weapon. "What happened here, Sergeant?" "Looks like a pedestrian accident to me. They must have been moving at quite a clip." Of course, if you should be caught with this perfect murder in progress or even after the fact, if you should be caught, you might wind up in death row. Death row. Wow. That's more than just fun, ain't it? I mean, this cat's there. Death row, man. Oh, well, you got that one meal, but that's not much of a consolation, is it? You gotta get to order your meal. Big deal. Why don't you leave me alone? I'm not hungry, man. They give you that one last meal. I say you can have some fun with that last meal. I mean, if you work it right, they gotta give you whatever you want. I mean, short of elephant steak, you know? They don't want to start on a new elephant just for one guy. But they got to give you pretty much what you want. That's part of the humanity of what they're going to do to you. Yeah, you could just order something, you know, like maybe, well, shit, you tell them you can't decide. That's it. I can't decide. I don't know. I don't know if I want steak or lobster, you know? I mean, I really love them both, and I honestly can't decide. Could they kill you? I don't think they could kill you if you honestly couldn't decide. Lie detector, truth serum, the man honestly doesn't know what he wants. We can't very well kill him. We can't drag him down the last mile screaming, I don't know what I want. You've got to give him a chance, and then man lives. Imagine if you worked it out and you kept it going 6 months. Man's still alive, can't decide on meal. 3 years, 8 years, and then finally you're an honest person, so you tell them when you do figure it out, and you say, I've decided what I'd like. I think I'll have steak. Okay? How did you want that? Well, my feeling is if you're gonna die, you know, or if you know, hey, die big. Die big. Nobody wants to just pass away. You don't want to be a euphemism, do you? Nobody wants to pass away. You know, Arnie passed away.
Oh, really?
Yes. Well, I didn't know that. Well, that's the idea. On the other hand, Dave died.
Oh, yes, I heard about Dave dying.
That's true. I say die big. Give it a shot, man. Go out big. It's your chance. Die big. Work in a few posthumous reflexes for your friends. Give them a show before you go. Entertain and uplift and instruct those you are leaving behind. When you die, give them a few posthumous reflexes. You know, the body does store electricity up. There's a certain storage of electricity, and even a dead body, a corpse, will occasionally go... And I say, if you have that potential after you're dead, use it properly. Pre-program. Before you die, pre-program some posthumous reflexes that will be entertaining to those you've left behind. Do something to capture their imagination. Roll over on the autopsy table. That's nice. Cross your legs, scratch your balls, do something. Now, the only reason that I even suggest that you have a choice about what you can do at the moment of death is a very little known and very little understood part of the death process called the 2-minute warning. Many people are not aware of it at all. The 2-minute warning. Just as in football. 2 minutes before you die, you receive an audible warning.
2 minutes, get your shit together.
The reason we don't know about it is because the only people who hear it die. And I don't think we'd believe someone anyway if he told us he received his 2-minute warning, would you? Some asshole on the bus?
Hey, I just got my 2-minute warning.
You'd think it was a coach out on the town, you know? But no, the 2-minute warning does arrive. And I say use that time to entertain, to leave something behind. Do something with the 2 minutes. Hey, if nothing else, give a speech. Little 2-minute speech. We can all give a little 2-minute speech. Just pick some subject you're very fond of and talk about it for 2 minutes. I mean, tell them. It's your last chance to tell them anything. So tell them, got 2 minutes, and I mean, wax eloquent, rise, bring it to the rafters, and then at the moment at the end you say, if this is not the truth, may God strike me dead.
And that was George Carlin, of course, and you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org in Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. And coming up next, it's that old familiar Bathrobes Piers broadsides. Stay tuned for 2 hours of me and you. You if you call in, me if you don't. So you be the judge.
He grew up in Yorkshire County on the class war battle lines. From the age of 14 years, he was working in the mines. He saw the children dying of hunger and disease. His family was evicted, and he headed overseas. Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, was where he landed for a while. Then he hopped a freight for about 3,000 miles. Ended up out west by Nanaimo Bay, where he worked the number 5 pit and spent his final days. Let's remember the departed, and for us the things they gave, as we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. As we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. In England and in Canada, from the east up to the west, the miners lived and died at capital's behest. Ginger saw the writing that was covering the wall. One big union was the watchword for the workers, one and all. Ginger organized the miners, and they struck for better pay. And they struck the Dunsmuir collieries and fought to see the day. When the labor movement could say its work was done, with a world run by workers for the good of everyone. Let's remember the departed, and for us the things they gave, as we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. As we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. Said he wouldn't fight for bosses, he wouldn't kill or die. He had black lung from the mines, but they called him fit to go. So he hid out in the mountains, out in the rain and snow. The cop who went to find him, this is what he said: I'm gonna bring him in, whether that's alive or dead. The people gained a martyr who would never leave our side, and 10,000 workers marched when they heard that Ginger died. Let's remember the departed, and for us the things they gave, as we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. As we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. Let's remember the departed, and for us the things they gave, as we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave. As we're gathered here by Ginger Goodwin's grave.
And that was from David Rovick's album Troubadour, People's History in Song. I've been playing numerous cuts from that album, actually working my way through it in the last few shows, and I'll continue to do so. In case you want to call in and you've got some thoughts on anything you've heard or will hear in the next hour, the call-in number here is 831-427-3772. 427-3772. We have a guest, Roxanne, who was going to be in the studio, but she's tending a grandbaby, and so she may be calling in to talk about the John Stewart Company, a notorious landlord in Santa Cruz that tenants are organizing to, shall we say, rein in. And we'll maybe talking to her later, assuming that she doesn't wake up a sleeping Nino, as we might say. So I've got some back tape that I'm kind of trying to catch up on, and I'm going to do that for part of this show, and some of it's appropriate because, at least this segment is, there was a protest in mid-June against the Foreign Wars in front of the Capitola recruiting station on 41st Avenue. And there was a more recent protest on July 3rd, Sunday at the town clock. I got a kind of brief report on that from Steve Plage, and that it was quite well attended, 30 to 40 people. And I didn't get to it, so I'm not sure about the specifics in a more concrete sense, but I think the issues didn't change much between mid-June and early July, so I think some of the things that are said here, or you're going to hear from the folks picketing in front of the recruiting station and encouraging support from people driving down 41st Avenue in Capitola, are still pertinent. And perhaps, of course, they're still pertinent, I mean, for sure. And I encourage you to call in with your thoughts, particularly how locally what can be done to help stop these wars, because they are sucking the lifeblood out of everybody, even if you don't see it happening in front of your very eyes. Jobs are disappearing, causing echo effects throughout the community, reverberating everywhere, shrinking the local economy, shrinking the national economy, ravaging the so-called survival net, and of course producing more and more casualties and veterans, and murdering tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people overseas, and creating more anger and more terrorism of the sort that is a nice selling point for building the military, but not for much else. So let's listen to a little of this. And again, call in if you'd like, 427-3772, and I will chat with you about it. And it is Saturday, June 18th, 2011. I'm approaching the Capitola 41st Avenue Armed Forces recruiting station, in front of which there's a small group of people, on the sidewalk. Mostly elderly, with signs, how many more, peace on earth, when a child dies, a father grieves, and bring them home now. Sherry Connable is setting up a microphone. Hi. War is not healthy for children.
Hey.
Hi.
How you doing?
How's the singing going?
Yeah. Well, I think it's great. Nobody else likes it, but anyway.
Well, now we have a singer here. You going to do some singing for us?
Oh, well, I was just singing that great... Well, it's one, two, three. Come on, sing with. What are we fighting for?
Do we have new lyrics?
No, I just updated it to Afghanistan.
Don't ask. Next stop, Afghanistan. It's true. Actually, next stop. Next stop is Pakistan.
Open up the pearly gate.
Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die.
Well, come on, all ye big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Sing with me.
God, I wish I knew the lyrics.
Terrible jam. Way down yonder in Afghanistan. So put down your book. Pick up a gun. We're going to have a whole lot of fun.
And it's one, two, three.
What are we fighting for? Whoopee! Don't ask me. I don't give a damn. Next stop's Afghanistan. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gate. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why.
Obama says it's time to die.
Now, come on, Wall Street, don't move slow. Hey, man, this is war, go, go. Plenty of money to be made. Supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just hope and pray if they drop the bomb, they drop it on the Viet Cong. And it's one, two, three.
A lot of date, but go on.
Fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is
Iran.
And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gate. Well, there. Ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, you're all going to hear another verse, or you want to get a...
Let's hear where you're online. People can hear your stuff.
Okay. nowhere. I've got a site, but I haven't been updating it. So
you'd better update it.
The next time you see me, that's a promise. I'm going to update it, because I've got a couple new songs.
We've been talking
Thanks for all the good work you do.
And you too. And again, we've been talking with...
Woody, Santa Cruz Woody.
Of course. Thank you, Woody.
Thanks a lot.
Woody. That KPFA reporter and a 95-year-old birthday
almost,
woman.
Almost, 1 month.
Almost.
And buried on page Ruth 7 Center. Of the New York Times, which inspired my sign, is... The official request is for $671 billion right here. See that?
For the military budget for this year.
That's the official, and we know it's more than that.
Which Republicans have asked that Libya be cut out of it.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway.
And some of the Democrats, too.
Well, I think they might be more anti-war than Obama lately.
Yep.
And mayors, this was today, mayors see end of war as fixed for struggling cities.
That's
so
we're coming to a vote on Monday, U.S. Conference of Mayors.
Yeah, and I want to add and remind people, though he hasn't publicized it as far as I know, Mayor Ryan Coonerty, under pressure from some of us, did agree to send a letter essentially joining in the sentiments of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which urged withdrawal or speedier withdrawal from the Afghanistan, I think, and also Iraq. I have yet to see... Ryan's letter, and I will send him an email actually while this show is going on to confirm that he did send out that letter in solidarity with the U.S. Conference of Mayors' call for withdrawal.
Anyway,
I think we need to go to Coonerty's office instead of hanging out on 41st Avenue, perhaps.
Well, we got to do something because one last thing, and I won't because there's better people to interview, but I was thinking about it. $10 billion of that money, if you do the math, you could hire 2.5 million teenagers this summer, 2.5 million, pay them $5,000 a year, $5,000 for the summer to fix up, paint the cities or...
Yeah, but they wouldn't get the military discipline they need. We're switching to slow speed.
2.5 million people this summer. Wouldn't that be fantastic if they did that? Well, $10 billion, just $10 billion of those dollars. So, okay, I'm going
to... I don't think you need my answer to that one.
I've had my morning...
More and more anti-homeless laws.
This is Greg.
I know Greg, vaguely. Hey, Greg. We'll put this on tape. We have Greg giving me a very good write-up here. You say that we knew each other first when street performers were getting the boot?
There was one little, wonderful little street performer. She was getting harassed by a policeman, and she was within her framework of the law to be a street performer. And she came to me and says, "Look what's happening to me." I says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." And you were coming down the street. And then I came to you and says, "Well, this is what's going on with this."
And I changed everything. No
yes,
longer are street performers. No, actually, I changed nothing, but we probably tried to do some. What happened then?
Well, she was able to continue on performing.
That's good. What kind of a performance was she doing?
She wrote her own original songs, and she played one of those little stringed harps. Very ethereal type of music.
Oh, yeah, beautiful music, as I remember. I don't remember her very well. I think I played some of her music later on Free Radio.
Yeah.
And we're talking with
Gregory.
And Gregory, you said that was the second time we ran into each other in Santa Cruz on political issues?
Yes, I had... I had a vehicle that needed to be updated to be driven in the street legally, and you gave me some options as far as how to go about getting that resolved, and...
You were able to?
Yes, I was. Thank you.
Oh, that's amazing. I appreciate that. Thank you, Greg.
Oh, thank you. You've been you're a great access to the community.
I help you, apparently, and I'm glad to hear it. And you better out there, you better be glad to hear it, too. So, thanks, Greg. We have a petition being circulated here, tax on California oil revenues to education initiative statute, and we're talking with...
Ruth Valdez.
And Ruth, how long have you been circulating this petition?
A couple of weeks now. It's fairly new coming out. It was put together by some UC professors and...
UCSC or just...
No, UC San Diego, actually. Uh-huh. And California is the only state, oil-producing state, that has not been taxing the oil extraction. And all the other states do this. And all the money will go only to education, all the different levels of education. And
And that's what you're urging people to sign up to put on the ballot.
Absolutely. Get it on the ballot so people are delighted when they see this.
Is this 2012 or 2011 ballot?
Well, you know, I thought it was 2011, but now I'm not sure. It might even be 2012. But in any case, we only have till September to get all the signatures
probably
to qualify.
Maybe it's a special election next year. I don't know.
Maybe.
Before the general election. You know, let me ask you a couple of devil's advocates questions, which you may not have the answer to, but maybe you'll then learn the answer. What percentage of the oil in the United States is actually in California? I mean, how big a business is it, say, compared with other states?
Well, I don't know how it compares with other states, but I do know that this, if it's passed, is expected to bring in to the state of California $2 to $3 billion per year.
And the state budget is what, $60 or $70 billion? Is it? I'm not sure what the budget is. Is it hundreds of billions or tens of billions?
I'm not sure, but here's what I do know: is that education in the last few years has been cut over and over and over, more than $3 billion.
But we have more prisons. Aren't you happy about that?
Maybe we can send our kids to prison. So it'll be a really good thing. And you know, the wonderful thing about California is that we do have the initiative process. So
which requires huge amounts of money and large numbers of foot soldiers to actually get out there and do it.
Large number of foot soldiers, but you know, so many people care about these cuts and about education that they're just delighted when they see this. You know, where do I sign up?
Well, let me use again devil's advocate approach here. Isn't it true, though, that California does get a significant amount of oil company investment, expenditure by the private sector because it is so tax-free? I mean, it's one of the lures that might have positive benefits that have to be talked about if you're going to talk about the positive benefits of cutting those off. In other words, I think it's important to balance those if we're going to have a fair discussion. You understand my point.
Two things. The oil companies are not going to leave. They're not going to move out of California because this is where the oil is. And
it depends on how much oil there really is here compared with other places.
2 to 3, you know, we're talking 15% tax bringing in $2 to $3 billion per year. So I'd say they're still taking a lot of oil out of California.
Again, the question would be how much, this is what the oil company executives will say, how much do they have to invest in order to do all that? I haven't either. I haven't seen it, but I'm wondering.
I've seen those ads on TV, and
I'm not arguing for them. I'm just asking the question. You know.
Yeah, I'm thinking that that's private money. Public schools are the backbone of a democracy, and I don't think we want our schools funded, by private money.
Well, I think that's certainly true. On the other hand, there are those Republicans, some anti-war Republicans even, who would claim, and in fact, the Republicans are carrying the anti-war banner in Congress these days,
it looks like. It's amazing, isn't it?
You know, they would say, well, if you have more money in the private sector, you will have, the tinkle-down theory that Reagan had, as I call it, or you'll have more tax money available eventually because there'll be more businesses booming and more commerce and yada, 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 which I think has a certain rationality to it. And the question is, when you compare, is this going to drive away any oil companies?
Absolutely
not. You don't think so? I mean,
no, how can it? They have to come here to get their oil.
I mean,
the thing is, the trickle-down theory is a myth. And our history shows
the tinkle down.
Yeah, well, we'd like to. The history shows that ever since Reagan, middle class wages have stagnated, and the only increase in the economy under the trickle down method,
tinkle down,
is that the, I mean, everybody knows the rich have gotten obscenely rich, richer and richer. The figures are astounding. And so trickle-down theory is...
Have other states who have previously not had such taxes and then opposed them lost oil companies? Do you have any stats on that?
No, I don't have any stats.
And the reason I raise these questions to you is, frankly, I'm a sympathizer, but I want to make sure when they, the real critics ask you, you know, and maybe you won't be in touch with the real critics. Maybe you'll just be in touch with the sympathizers. But it will be helpful to know these answers.
Oh, absolutely.
And I expect the next time I see you, you'll have done your homework, Ruth. A pregnant pause.
Yeah, I lost my thought. I have to say again, the oil companies are not going to move out. What are they going to, are they going to move out and just quit extracting oil? I don't think so.
Well, again, I ask, what's the history in other... You may be able to prove this by looking at other states where they raised the tax and the companies stayed. Or maybe they fled to other countries or other states. I don't know.
Well, we're not talking about a business tax. We're talking about an extraction tax. And the oil that they're extracting is underneath the California soil. So how could they move that aspect of it?
Well, as we say in Libya, what is our oil doing under their soil is what I want to know.
Right.
Anyway, we've been talking with
Ruth Valdez.
And Ruth, if people want to sign this initiative, now they can't do it online, probably.
No.
You have to do it.
It's an actual California initiative. They can look for signature gatherers at events like this and at the farmers markets and also in the Pacific Garden Mall. We'll be out there.
Assuming, for example, you don't try to do it back at Trader Joe's, or the property management and Trader Joe's will have you cited for trespass.
We have to stay on public sidewalks.
Actually, the Constitution says we don't, but for some reason
the
Santa Cruz police don't think much of the Constitution.
Oh, I thought it was public sidewalks, but I know I see petition and signature gathers all the time in front of New Leaf Market, and we gathered signatures in front of Safeway. No problems at all. People are just, they love the idea of this tax.
Well, I hope that people in Santa Cruz stand up for the rights of petition gatherers like yourself. I know the ACLU is not in front of Trader Joe's, where there have traditionally been people in the back of that parking lot since Trader Joe's opened, and now there are not. So I see a creeping repression in Santa Cruz, and unfortunately a creeping indifference on the part of activists who are sort of willing to go along with increasingly constrained limits, whether it's in city council or in the public spaces or with the latest obscenities of the Obama regime nationally and internationally, which you're protesting here today.
Well, that indifference is a national disease, right?
Well, yeah, but it's also a local disease. This is a so-called liberal ha-ha community, you know.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thanks.
And here we have that old-time activist who actually is an organizer of the Julian Assange-Bradley Manning Coalition. Are those guys freed yet there, Walt?
No, sir. Bradley Manning has been transferred to Fort Leavenworth.
Thank God. And are the meals any better there?
Well, reportedly he's being treated a little bit better.
Being woken up every half hour?
Reportedly not.
He might be committing suicide.
He could be.
I'd commit suicide long ago. Actually, I probably wouldn't. I'd just say, hey, I'll tell you everything.
I think he did. They don't want to believe him. They want to contrive a case, you know. The truth doesn't really matter.
Well, you got to find some way to get these Assange people out of the business of embarrassing all the governments of the world.
That's the key. You're right.
So here you are. You're waving a sign, fund people's needs, not war, and bank bail us. End the war now. That's the Answer Coalition. Taking the grim side of all this, since this is a smaller protest than the last one we had, and they seem to be shrinking every time we do a protest. I'm trying to be realistic as well as inspirational in my discussions.
It's fairly early on a Saturday morning.
It is, and it's overcast.
For all I know, surf could be up. You know?
Good point. Maybe we should move this protest onto the waves.
To the beach.
Yeah, might actually get more people out there. You know, a lot of people do come to the beaches. I also was thinking one way to do it might be to spread it out more so people can see it at a greater distance, say, rather than sort of huddling together. I was going to take a sign and walk about half a block, and I might do that.
Excellent idea, Robert.
Yeah. So is there any activism around, any new updates on Julian Assange and Bradley Manning other than Manning's transfer to Leavenworth?
I believe that Assange is still staying in England, trying to avoid extradition to Sweden.
And, of course, Julian Assange had a lengthy, I think he was, Amy Goodman hosted a forum in England in which he chatted with a Slovenian philosopher at length, and the entire thing is available online for those who want to find it at democracynow.org. And there were, I think, selections of it played at the Democracy Now! Daily News shindig that happens every morning. Again, go to www.democracynow.org.
Under house arrest?
I believe so, yeah.
$100,000 bail or some such thing?
I'm not sure of the bail.
Some big amount, I'd heard.
Yeah.
Of course, Ed Fry, who's in jail for sleeping, has a $50,000 bail.
And Ed Fry, of course, is out of jail. He's been released on $110 bail after the judge and the DA suddenly discovered that they had misread the bail schedule. Apparently, remedial reading is required for both DAs and judges henceforth.
In Santa Cruz County Jail.
Pretty ridiculous.
Our own local political prisoner. Yeah. I mean, you know, Santa Cruz needs its own political prisoners.
What would we do?
I mean, you know, come on, we got to measure up somehow. I mean, you know, after Kansas has, you know, Bradley Manning, Washington has the people who protested at the Pentagon. I guess Ellsberg was one of them. They were arrested for, or maybe they protested at Leavenworth. I know there were a bunch of people arrested in protests in both at D.C. and at Leavenworth around both the war and Manning and Assange. But, you know, we don't want to be left out of that. I mean, you know, how can Santa Cruz gain its, you know, true notoriety without...
Progressive community here, you're right.
Progressively worse, yeah. Progressively more indifferent.
In the forefront. So, yeah, Ed Fry and who's the other guy?
Gary Johnson. You know,
Gary Johnson, yeah. 6 months bail. I mean, six months.
And though both Gary and Ed are out on bail pending appeal, once that appeal is denied, as I think it's likely to be, they will again face 6 months in jail for the crime of peaceful protest on the steps of the courthouse against the infamous Santa Cruz sleeping ban, which criminalizes 1,500 to 2,000 people each night for doing what they have to do, sleep. Not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere.
In jail for sleeping. Technically, the crime was lodging. State Penal Code 647E. They were convicted by a jury, but under instructions from Judge John Gallagher that lodging in this case meant sleeping. And, of course, in Santa Cruz City, there's no legal place to sleep on any public property. It is all a crime, according to the, or it certainly was completely a crime at the time that they were arrested for this crime. And what they were doing is they were protesting the fact that it was a crime. So they're doing their own protests. And I think probably they would be here certainly in spirit and in sympathy with this protest if they were out. Although...
And it's still a crime, actually. Even if you sign up for the waiting list of the city's pet homeless project, which provides only almost symbolic, minuscule amount of shelter, I think it's 48 beds each night for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people at the Paul Lee Loft. If you sign up for this and are on the waiting list, then according to the new ordinance cooked up by the city attorney in response to Gary Johnson and Ed Fry and dozens of others sleeping out at Peace Camp 2010 last year, then you will have your ticket discharged. That doesn't mean the police are in any way stopped from confiscating your property, writing you a ticket, searching you, interrogating you, directing you to move on or get out of town or go hide in the woods. But you'll have the supposed satisfaction if you can get on the waiting list, and if they choose to pass on this information to the city attorney, which apparently they've been doing some of the time and not doing at other points, according to activist Steve Plaich, then you get your ticket dismissed. But the sleeping ban is still in force and still active for the majority of the homeless community in Santa Cruz, and it's still a disgrace. And it's still the reason why a lot of people are protesting, well, feel strongly about it. I wish more people were actually visibly and actively protesting. But it's the reason why a number of us continue to fight this fight. And, of course, it's not just the sleeping ban. It's a whole series of other ordinances along with hypocritical cosmetic devices. Actually, not even cosmetic devices, but attempts to criminalize and blame the victims. You may have seen these new red meters that are stuck up on the corner of Walnut and Pacific and Soquel and Pacific downtown. They're called, I don't know, Imagine Real Change or Imagine Change meters. As I understand it, one of them I observed yesterday, the one at Borders, has had its head removed, apparently by some patriot who decided it was time to, give it a examine the meter needed to have its head examined if it believed that dropping coins in a meter was somehow a good thing for people to do to help social change, when it actually is supposed to be a deterrent to people who are being discouraged from giving to panhandlers, and hence a discouragement to panhandlers downtown, people needing money in difficult times.
I think Ed used to come to these protests. Ed Fry was.
I have seen him before. Yeah,
he's spoken at your protest.
Actually, yeah, at the town clock a couple times.
And he's actually run for Congress and was concerned about these issues, putting them in a way that might actually result in a public dialogue.
One of our concerned activists, Susan Worth, here, is collecting signatures protesting Ed and Gary's incarceration.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. I know that Ed Fry does have a hearing coming up on next Friday, 8:30 in the morning, to modify sentence so that he can, Judge Gallagher can, you know, take a step back.
And again, since this was recorded in mid-June, that hearing happened, and as I said, the judge and the DA made the remarkable discovery that the $50,000 bail was apparently exaggerated by a figure of about 200 times. It really should have been $110.
And maybe Ed, too, could take a step back. Ed did make the militant stand that he would not go to the jail in a week, and he would not pay a $50,000 bail, which he's being held on, and he would not do one minute of community service, much less 400 hours, and he would not accept 3 years probation. So the judge decided to punish him by giving him the maximum, not the maximum sentence. I have improperly reported it was a maximum sentence. Ed was charged with 3 counts of lodging, which means he slept 3 times, if you can imagine that, in front of the county building. At a time.
3 strikes and you're out? He was a three-time offender
three
there?
3 times would be 18 months rather than 6 months. So he only got 6 months. The judge was being very lenient, actually, considering not, of course. Anyway, but that was an inaccuracy in a prior report, for which I am now correcting all you critics out there. So I know that Congress, 27 senators have signed a letter to the Fuhrer asking that Obama change the, you know, withdraw more quickly from Afghanistan. You're familiar with that?
I have heard that, yeah. I saw a video online of Dennis Kucinich talking about that just 3 days ago, I believe.
And he also, of course, has filed a lawsuit suggesting that the War Powers Act is being violated by Obama's and his mouthpiece is claiming that there are no hostilities that the U.S. is engaged in. It's sort of gentle, unhostile bombing. All right, we're going to sing along here. We're getting a song, We Declare Peace, My Country, It Is of Thee. Indeed. Oh, you little music coming up here. This is your opportunity to actually break into the music market. Anyway, we've been talking with...
Give it our best shot, Robert.
And again, your name, for those who don't know it.
Walt Hoekel.
And your next scheduled protest, you have one coming up?
We do. I think it's July 4th at the intersection of Ocean and Water Street.
It actually was at July 3rd, and it was at Ocean and Water. Not, as I may have said, at the town clock. And as I understood, it was a considerably larger protest and inspiring one.
What's the subject matter?
The same darn thing, man. You know, this country's been taken over. It's been hijacked by fascists, basically, and we want to push back. You know, end the wars and bring the money home and take care of people's needs rather than corporate needs.
Well, trust Mayor Coonerty and Supervisor Coonerty. They'll steer things right. I mean, after all, Tony Madrigal went to Washington and shook hands with President Obama. What more could you ask for?
Well, I'd like him to listen to the mayors. The mayor of L.A. was recently at a conference where he said it's unconscionable that we're building bridges in Kandahar and another city in the Mideast, and we can't afford to do the same in Baltimore or cities in this country.
Private enterprise will take care of it.
I don't think so. It hasn't so far.
Thank you, Walt.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
So I missed a couple of songs here. We just had a song, Bring 'Em Home, to the tune of The Rain in Spain from My Fair Lady, called No One Wins a War in Afghanistan. You missed that one. And here's a laughing protester doing a soft shoe on the grass with her sign, Free Archer.
Dancing, forget it. I ain't included.
All right. She's dancing on the grass. Do you have a permit for that, madam?
No, and I don't give a damn. I'll dance anywhere I damn please.
You tell them. But what if the protest organizers tell you this is inappropriate?
They just may. They just kicked my dogs out.
Oh, for God's sake. I think a little pooch. Your dog was kicked out?
Yeah, one of the raging grannies complained.
Oh, dear. Well, looks like a pretty ferocious-looking dogs, all of what, 1 foot high, and maybe 18 inches long. What are these pooches, anyway? What kind of a...
They're Chihuahua mixes. He's a little Min Pin Chihuahua, and she's a Jack Russell.
And one of them has a sort of a piece.
Yeah, one white paw.
And one white paw.
And he dances. He does the moonwalk.
A dancing dog. Now that's a double crime. Hello there. And this dog has a bunch of peace signs all over its sweater or whatever it's wearing. So. All right. Well, keep it up. And we've been talking to the dancer,
Susan Worth.
Thanks, Susan. War chanty to the tune of Country Roads. We're talking again with that pup lover,
Susan Worth.
You're not only an anti-war activist, you're also not just doing the Rotkin thing of saying, oh, we're against the war abroad, but let's make war on the poor in Santa Cruz. You were actually circulating a petition to free Ed Frye.
I'm a friend of Gary Johnson's.
And
I met him at the soup kitchen. He's a wonderful man. He has more integrity than any man I've ever met. And he deserves to be free. He's only in jail for sleeping. Him and Ed Frye, his attorney who handled the case and did a beautiful job, they're only in jail for sleeping. And it's unfortunate that it's against the law in Santa Cruz, and it shouldn't be, because we only have 100 beds a night, and there's 1,000 to 2,000 people.
And actually, it's not 100 beds a night at all. It's, as I said, more like 40, 48 or thereabouts. Linda LeMaster, of course, is another activist coming up for trial on the same charges as Ed Frye and Gary Johnson. And as I said before, Gary and Ed still face, are convicted of a crime which has a penalty of 4 to 6 months in jail. The crime, of course, is sleeping, which, as defined by John Gallagher, the judge to the jury, which was trying to understand what the word lodging meant. And lodging, according to our constitutionally oriented judge, John Gallagher, is falling asleep with a sign in front of the county building when the sheriff doesn't want you to. The interesting interpretation of the Constitution, Santa Cruz style, somewhat similar, as I mentioned before, to the Santa Cruz Police Department's interpretation of the so-called Pruneyard decision, which found that in 1980, it actually was a decision something that happened right over the hill in Campbell in the Pruneyard Shopping Center, that people with signs soliciting, engaging in labor activities, gathering signatures and so forth, have the right to do that, even on private property if it's open to the public in a shopping center. And that apparently no longer applies in Santa Cruz, according to the Santa Cruz Police Department, at least not in the Trader Joe's, CVS, sushi, Mobo Sushi area, the area that is, of course, the large shopping area parking lot where you're likely to get your vehicle towed if you don't watch out. But it was really shocking to me. At first I heard, excuses from Trader Joe's. Oh, it's not us, it's the property managers. And then I understood later that it was the Trader Joe's folks. And I've heard more recently that Trader Joe's management and workers are becoming more aggressively hostile to people who are, quote, loitering, and even people who don't look homeless, can you imagine? Loiterers of all kinds in the parking lots. And this is an example, I guess, of what I call the fascist mindset, which sets in, where you don't need goose-stepping SS troops. You just need people with the idea that they can act like little cops, all of them, to remove people that they think are violating this rule or that rule. And it's a really pernicious thing. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio, in case you just tuned in. My name is Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pier. Hello. And you can call me if you'd like. 427-3772, area code 831. 427-3772. Tip of the hat to Matthew for calling in, who is giving a tip of the hat to Santa Cruz Woody, a musician who we heard speak briefly and sing briefly, and who was at this peace rally that we're going to hear more tape from. The peace rally happened on, I guess it was June 18th, if my date was correct on that tape. And let's hear some more of it. I guess we were listening to Susan Wirth, who was talking about Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, who are currently at liberty, as I said, but trying to devise new strategies and ways of supporting not just Linda LeMaster, but also many of the other homeless people in Santa Cruz who every night face the same criminalization that they always faced. Although, as I said, through Peace Camp 2010's pressure, there has been a legal change that does, in theory, provide an escape hatch for some people who get on the waiting list if this homeless service center acts like it's supposed to. But actually, things in some ways have gotten worse because the homeless service center refuses to publicly acknowledge it does not have enough space, though it's quite clear that it doesn't. We've tried to get them to write a letter to the effect that they have only 48 spaces each night, maybe a couple more that are in the River Street shelter, which isn't really officially part of the Homeless Service Center, but is part of that same complex of buildings out there on Coral Street near Highway 1. Couldn't do that. Couldn't get them to agree to request that to give them to issue receipts so that if a person has signed up for the waiting list, they can show this piece of paper to the cops and say, hey, Mr. Policeman, I've signed up for a waiting list. If you give me a ticket, it'll just be dismissed. Please move along and do your job somewhere else. Monica Martinez and Letitia Schwartz have declined to do that. They won't even do what they were doing previously, which was if the shelter is full on any particular night and you happen to get a ticket on that night, you can't go back to the shelter and have them issue you a letter that, as you used to be able to do for the last few years, that said, hey, our shelter was full, which has been the case actually for the last decade and a half. It's actually been the case ever since I showed up in Santa Cruz, 76, 77, thereabouts. The shelters have been completely full. And in terms of the number of people around, it's just no shelter. And because they won't even now issue a letter stating that their shelter was full on a particular night, they are showing that they're even more resistant to an open exposure of what's happening and to facilitate people getting rid of their tickets. And I don't understand it. And I've asked this question repeatedly of Monica Martinez, mostly last fall in emails, and she ultimately said I was too rude to talk to and wouldn't talk to me anymore. The rudeness was simply my repeating the request by email when she wouldn't give me an answer. So what can you do?
They need to sleep. They just need to sleep.
And you actually had a couple of petitions full of signatures that got mislaid.
Yes, I had a couple of petitions already filled, mostly with homeless folks, their signatures. And I was going to get the staff, but I didn't want to put it inside my car in an unsafe place because one of my little dogs chews everything. So I put it on the roof of my car and accidentally took off with it.
And somewhere that petition is flying around. But at least you got, sounds like, 20 or 30 or 40 signatures.
Yeah, and I'll be able to get more. Yeah, I'll
just get them again.
Get those again.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
Yeah.
Talking with?
Susan Wirth. Thanks. Homeless activist, too.
Thank you, Susan. So I'm kind of taking a walk down the down 41st Avenue to kind of give the cars who are rolling into Capitola an advanced look at my sign, which is how many more, meaning, of course, how many more Afghanis, Pakistanis, Iraqis, Yemenis, who knows, Iranians are going to get butchered, shot down. And there we are, the first positive honk in about 5 minutes. It's been been a pretty silent car crowd for most of the time I've been here, which has been about, half an hour or something like that. So it's a quiet Saturday morning. Now it's overcast, and sometimes cars only begin to honk in a kind of reactive approach, where one honks and then others also begin to honk. But we had a few thumbs up, and I've seen positive statements. I only have seen one negative statement from a vehicle, so it does look like there is a general approval. Though, as I said before, this is a very aged protest. We have people, looks like everybody's over the age of 50, maybe over the age of 60. I would say even a majority might be over the age of 70, although that's perhaps presumptuous. Organized by Sherry Connable, who's standing with Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster Louis LaFortune. Louis holds his sort of sun placard, the Santa Cruz Peace Coalition, and Sherry holds a dove sign. And there is a KPFA reporter here with a microphone and a tape recorder recording everything in town. Everything. There's a lot of doing recording, including a lot of the music, which I'm not recording. So there also seems to be the arrival of the occasional younger person. I see Sandino of Free Radio Santa Cruz has arrived. We have a person actually under 40 here. Impressive, very impressive. We have a report from Sandino, who's here representing the under 40 generation, the only person under 40 here.
Go ahead. So I'm riding over here on my bicycle, and I got this. It was the American flag. It's the corporate Adbusters flag. So instead of the stars, it's got all the little, like, you know...
the real powers of Santa.
It's the corporate American flag. It's the corporate American flag. So anyway, this guy pulls up to me and he says, you know, hey, excuse me, you. And I'm like, thinking he's about to rip into me or something. And he just asked me, are you in distress? Because as you can see...
It's upside down.
As you can see, my flag is upside down. Well, maybe your listeners can't see, but you can see that my flag is upside down. Yeah. So it's
Are you suggesting the country is up to now? This is a slur on our corporations. What do you got against Pizza Hut? Come on, tell me the truth.
I mean, you know, their pizza's not that good, number one, and they're owned by PepsiCo, number two, and all that other crazy crap. You know, it's crap food.
Yeah, it's conspiracy here.
No, it's not conspiracy.
Yeah, all right, then.
Check your facts, Robert.
Yeah, well, I'm asking you. I'm simply trying to be educated.
Well, Yum Brands, I'm pretty sure they're the ones that own Pizza Hut, and Yum Brands is owned by PepsiCo. Go into any... what is it? It's Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, and a couple other ones where there's only Pepsi products in all those restaurants because they're all owned by PepsiCo as the larger parent corporation.
Superior to be Pepsi is the drink.
I mean, it's the next generation.
Yes, there you are. What's the matter with you?
I don't drink it, though. I'm the only next generation here, and I don't drink that crap.
You're a Coke drinker.
No. Like, you know, ginger
OJ.
Brew, ginger ale.
Yeah. Water.
Homemade shit.
Yeah.
Juice.
Well, I know that I saw you most recently in a video in which you were paying an educational visit to Mayor Coonerty's class. Did you learn anything at that class?
It's quite interesting. Quite interesting.
And of course, people can read about it on ndva.org/Santa Cruz, and they can hear half the story. Apparently, somebody neglected to put in Mayor Coonerty's response. Was that simply a technical difficulty?
These things are so difficult to... I wasn't in charge of that. I don't know where the editorial decision came in, but...
You witnessed Coonerty's response. Mm-hmm. Did he make any... What was his defense, if anything?
He just talked about a lot of city policies that are in place that are supporting the migrant community, and I think tried to...
soft pedal his opposition to the...
Just dodge the question. I felt like we asked him a very specific question of how can you be a civil libertarian and, you know, then essentially on, you know, support through your actions this program. You know, we need a mayor that's willing to take a symbolic stance against this program.
Explain the program for those who don't know, because we get sort of launched
in... Secure Communities.
And what is Secure Communities?
Secure Communities is a program of the Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, that runs everyone who goes through into any jail, runs their fingerprints through a Immigration Customs Enforcement, which is the La Migra, the new immigration, INS, that's their database. And so anyone who has any kind of contact with INS ever in the past, you know, gets flagged and is essentially expedited for deport and sent off to whoever it is, they send migrants to these concentration camps these days, you know. So it's,
and we have any stats about how many
it's
people
a horrible violation of people's civil liberties. It's a horrible violation of their human rights. And, you know, our constitutional law mayor is, you know, claiming on one side that he's a civil libertarian and protector of people's rights. And yet on the other, you know, essentially in his actions on the council, supporting this program. You know,
a strange contradiction.
It's an odd contradiction. And that's why we were there. We wanted to ask him, how do you justify this? And he didn't really answer the question, I felt like. He kind of talked about other policies and other issues and, like, kind of, did the political dodge, as you said, you know.
Now, I know that I heard the your presentation, but I'm wondering how long did Coonerty respond? Was it an equal length of time? Was there any dialogue back and forth?
It wasn't a dialogue. He made it very clear, like, he would give us, you know, a platform to read our statement, which is what we wanted, and then we wanted him to respond, and then we didn't want to take up any more of his students' time. We wanted to get in and get out. The whole interaction took about 10 minutes, literally. We walked in silence. We, you know,
class at UCS.
We positioned ourselves, about the 40, 50 people that were there, we all positioned ourselves in the class, and then I proceeded to apologize to the students for interrupting them because it was finals time and we weren't trying to inconvenience them, but we had an issue with the mayor that we needed to ask him. And so we asked our question, we read our statement, we allowed him to respond, and then we walked out. The whole, like I said, the whole thing took literally like 10 minutes. So it wasn't a brutal disruption. We walked in and out in silence, you know.
He only took a few moments to respond, or he took about the same amount of time?
A couple minutes.
And what about the reaction of the students? What did they talk to you afterward? Did anybody in the class want to ask you questions? What was your sense of that?
Truthfully, I don't know. I know I was in the front of the class, so I couldn't see all the numerous computer screens, but people were telling me that in the back of the, from the back of the room, from what they could see, that a lot of computer screens were Googling, you know, secure communities and you know, a lot of different, that people were looking up the issues. So if anything, I just hope that the students in the classroom got a different perspective on the issue, and they were able to.
Feedback since then?
I had a lot of different conversations with a lot of different people, you know.
It's positive, mostly negative, mixed?
A mixed bag, but yeah, I think once people understand the issues and why we were there and why we did what we did and how we did what we did, I think most people are supportive, yeah.
Is anyone monitoring the police and the deputies now in terms of the number of people being seized by ICE in Santa Cruz County under these non-violent misdemeanors and infraction jailings?
You know, SCORE and the Immigration Action Group of SCORE is doing a really good job of keeping track of this data. They have comparative numbers of what it is basically like kind of on a national scale as well as what it is on a statewide and then like on a county level as well. So they actually have really good statistics, and unfortunately Santa Cruz is higher than both the national average and I think the state average. Like, we per capita, we're sending more non-violent, you know, non-serious offenders through this program than we're sending serious offenders. You know, the vast majority of people deported under this thing are not hardened violent criminals. They're people that had, like, you know, driving without licenses, or maybe even, like, you know, a drunk in public, or any kind of thing, any kind of little trivial
thing. Incidents of sitting on the sidewalk is a misdemeanor for which you can be arrested.
Under that, yeah.
Although I'm not aware that often happens.
Even those kind of crazy, downtown ordinances could lead them to be deported, yeah.
Although I would imagine
they were arrested for it.
Mostly, I haven't seen a lot of Latinos downtown sitting on the sidewalk, though I suppose...
We're not looking for work. We ain't sitting around bumming. We're looking
damn
for work.
Straight, man. Unlike the lazy, honky bums and hippies.
I didn't say that.
Well, I didn't either. Somebody else must have said that. So how can people... Certainly not. Any websites to suggest people go to for more information on this issue?
Check out SCORE's website. I believe it's overcomeracism.org, and you can check out the Brown Berets. They're one of the forces involved, but we were not the lead force. I think that's one of the things that's got confuddled in this whole thing. The Brown Berets were asked by students at UCSC to be, you know, part of this action, and we lended support, but we weren't the real driving force.
Students in the class or students outside the
class? No, I don't think they were students of his class. I think they were just students in the Latino and undocumented students, including, you know, including students that don't have...
Illegal immigrants, in other words.
AB 540 students who are allowed to go to the university thanks to their residency here, yes. So they asked the Berets to help, and the Brown Berets responded in solidarity by helping our, you know, our people who we see are living day by day under horrible disruptions, under horrible, like, conditions. I mean, living literally as, like, shadows in the society and the second-class citizens not able to access all the things that we often take for granted and the securities that we just completely, like, you know, don't even acknowledge anymore because we feel so entitled to them. When those people ask me for help and when those people ask the Brown Berets for help, you're absolutely right. We're going to be out there supporting them. So, I mean, it was essentially initiated by those folks. And I think that's one of the things is people talking about, it was the Brown Berets doing this. No, it was a coalition of a lot of different people. So, Students Informing Now, Border Stompers Collective, up specifically up at UCSC.
What was Coonerty's class? What was the nature of the subject matter that he was teaching? What kind of class does he teach up at UCSC? Do we know what the name of that or what the specifics
are? Yeah, several. I don't know. You can Google them.
But the one that you were in was...
Truthfully, I don't even know.
We're gonna get you for this one, Sandy.
You can dig me for that one, okay, if you want.
That's
the worst of my crimes, I think I'm doing pretty good here.
Well, you know, 3 years ago, you actually had another public statement about Ryan Coonerty at the ACLU's Hammer of Justice Award. Maybe it was the year before. Actually, it was that year when he got the Hammer of Justice Award. At the same time, I think a homeless activist, Bernard Klitzner, was standing up in the corner with a sign accusing Ryan Coonerty, who I believe was then mayor again.
He was.
For crimes, essentially institutional hate crimes against homeless people, by supporting laws that institutionally criminalize them in many public spaces. You said that you had to agree with that, on occasion with that, even that radical gadfly activist, what's his name, Robert Norris, that Mayor Coonerty might take pause in some of these actions. Am I accurate in stating, or am I misstating?
Yeah, I'm not going to say yes or no to any statement you may or may not have. What I will say is that the Brown Berets were also a recipient of an award that year, and we were kind of concerned that someone who we saw as not a great defender of civil liberties was getting an award at an institutional organization that's supposed to protect and defend them. So we felt a little conflicted about what award meant at that point. If someone like Ryan were to get honored for those particular qualifications, not to say he's not a bad guy or anything, but if we're looking at that. Set of standards, his record on protecting our access to parking lots, his record on protecting our access to civil, to the public process, and his support of the police spying on, peaceful groups in town. I mean, when you look at that, that's not a great record of a civil libertarian. So our organization decided that we wanted to say something at the event. And I was nominated to say something by my group.
You were the fall guy.
I was the voice. I was the public, I was the backbone, the moral conscience, the truth to power teller. I don't know what you want to call me.
You weren't wearing dark glasses at that time.
I was earlier when I was marching at the Gay Pride Parade. And that was a very, very awesome day. The Watsonville Brown Braves were there at the first annual Watsonville Pride Parade. And then we went to the ACLU Award Ceremony. I took my glasses off to go into the award ceremony. That's true. But it was a little scary for me, truthfully. But it felt good because I felt like, not only my organization but myself, I was able to say something to a local elected official who we're supposed to be able to hold accountable for their actions. All of our elected officials. But I don't have access to Obama, I don't have access to the state, governor. I don't have access to
Tony Madrigal was shaking hands with the Fuhrer himself yesterday. Perhaps this is a new opening for the Latino community. Perhaps
about,
it's in the paper. Check
about.
It out.
I don't read this. The paper.
You better read the paper.
What do you call it? Sent email.
I did. It's in national press, my boy.
Excuse me.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Tony Madrigal, council member, and a number of others were greeted and handshaken by President Obama yesterday in an official ceremony.
What?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Where?
In Washington, D.C. It's in the Sentinel. I can show you. Not that means anything.
What did my boy Tony do in Washington, D.C.? What were they there for?
Kissing ass, licking lips, and shaking hands, which Tony does very, very vociferously, as you know. That's Brian.
That was awesome. You hear that?
What did he say?
F you as he drove by,
All right. At least I got a reaction.
These little old ladies, And then the greatest part is he's stuck like 20 feet away, literally. His car is stuck in traffic. So, if you really wanted to... That's just ridiculous, People don't always think things through, I guess.
Fair enough. Well, listen, I want to thank you. We've been talking with the sometime representative of the occasional position by the Brown Berets.
Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo.
Whose radio show can be found on...
Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.1 FM, www.peakradio.org, every Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m. They call it the Global Local.
And have you discussed this issue on your show?
Not really.
Well, perhaps...
Whoever calls me, man, call my freaking show. Monday night, 7 to 9 p.m.
427-3772.
427-FRSC, and that's in the 831 area code, of course.
I could go on, but I'm going to stop right here.
Yeah, I think that's about good.
And for those who want more information about the Brown Berets supporting student concerns about Ryan Coonerty's political support as mayor for what seems to be a pretty clearly anti-immigrant position in supporting the ICE's secure communities, roust them on minor charges and deport them back to their home countries, even though they're not even convicted of any crime, much less a major crime. You can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and use the search function for Coonerty, C-O-O-N-E-R-T-Y. You'll see, actually you'll hear Sandino giving his presentation to the students in the class, expressing his concerns about Mayor Coonerty, and you'll see the many Brown Berets along the wall, standing along the wall. And what you won't see, however, as I mentioned in the broadcast, is you won't hear, that is say, or see Coonerty's response, which is too bad because I think Coonerty's response generally to these kinds of issues is so, well, unpersuasive to me, surely, that it's important to show it because it shows either how confused he is or how indifferent he is, possibly simply one can't really, I don't know exactly what his motives are, except I suspect he's a centrist politician who wants power. He wanted to be an Obama delegate. We were able to successfully deny him that a couple years ago. He probably wants to run for one of these legislative offices that will be created by the redistricting. I mean, that's been suggested by certain activists. Ambitious politicians who are moving further and further to the right with the notion that this is the way that they can get political power. Very dangerous, frankly kind of disgusting. I find it distasteful in the extreme. We do have a caller, though. Let's see who's calling in here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Uncle Robert.
Hi.
Hey there. This sounds like Rough Country. Yeah. Roxanne. Hey, Roxanne.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, I know we arranged to get together to talk about some of the foibles, fallacies, and failings of the landlord, the John Stewart Company.
Yes.
And you yourself are a victim and a client of that particular, well, you're a customer.
I'm a tenant.
You are a tenant. So you're, what is the John Stewart Company? How far do its tentacles extend in Santa Cruz? What's it all about, Roxanne?
It's a management company. Now, I'm here. You're not on the radio right now, right?
Oh, yes. We are on the radio right
now. Right?
At the very moment. You can't. What, are you trying to listen to it? You won't be able to hear it. You have to listen. Don't turn down your radio. You'll be utterly confused.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it'll,
there's a delay. You can't do that.
Okay. Well, she just was trying to hear the radio. Turn it down.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. She'll be able to hear it later. And for those who do want to hear this later, if you haven't had enough the first time, it is archived. And it's archived. You have to give me a call on the Huff line. Huff, it's 423-HUFF, and I will give you the secret code. It's actually not that secret. It's just cumbersome, and I don't want to try to give it over the air. Normally, I'd direct you to the Huff website, but the Huff website is only half up these days.
So you be quiet.
No, I've got a lot to say. Let me keep going. Why don't you interview me for a while?
No.
Anyway, Roxanne, go ahead.
We just started a tenants union.
Uh-huh.
Because people have kind of had enough of the management company, for sure. We've had people who've lived in black mold for a year apiece, two people. One man, 90 years old. Everybody's always been afraid because they're told, if you don't like it, get out, literally. And so we decided to join together so that in large numbers we would have more clout. And so I think I was just going to report to you on the new tenants union. There's only been two meetings. The subject of the last meeting were neighbors who pound on people's floors and doors and stuff because they think they're too loud. So we're going to be getting in mediators for that. There's so many problems because we're just starting, you know. So.
Well, I'm here and I'm listening, but I mean, it sounds like the tenants union is taking on at least two different broad categories of issues. One of them is I don't know, mold at the which
we're actually taking in a lot. People smoke alarms go off. Like in my house, the smoke alarm, the first one is 11 steps from my stove. Goes off all the time when I cook. And they are so loud, you wouldn't believe. And so then they disturb other people. Then I have another fire alarm that's about, I would say, 6 steps from that one. And then another fire alarm that's 11 steps on the other side of
so
the
you have, you're over fire alarmed and apparently complaints to the management have not been successful in in dealing with the actual volume of these alarms?
Yeah, and the their only interest is the fact that if a fire starts, they would be held responsible. So they don't care if we're being blasted out.
And
or
you're
being radioactive out, because I understand there's a lot of radiation with those.
Really? Let's ask, the question that would say, well, have you tried talking to the John Stewart Company?
Well, yes, this is the fun part about having an association now. They, they say nobody has complained but you. No one. Now you get, 35 people in a meeting and you've got 13 raising their hands saying they've been, complaining and told they're the only ones that complain. They aren't going to be able to get away with that anymore.
And are the are management spies infiltrating these meetings?
They could be. It doesn't matter.
And how many people live in this complex you live in?
Pardon?
How many people live there?
There's 50 apartments. I don't know how many people exactly live here.
So probably somewhere between 50 and 150, something like that?
Yeah.
And is this an old folks' home, pretty much?
No, not really. It's all age.
It's all ages.
To qualify to be in here, you need to be low income. You can be a single mother. You can have mental problems. You can be old aged. There's many different ways to qualify, but first and foremost, you do have to be income eligible.
And how long is this a long standing kind of company, John Stewart? Has it managed this property for a long period of time? Or?
No, they just took over a year ago, maybe a year and a half.
And you've been living there from before then?
Yes.
And things got worse once the John Stewart Company came? And how did things get worse?
Things got worse because they had even more nonsensical rules,
Such as?
Children couldn't play outside, couldn't play with a ball, couldn't ride their bike, couldn't have a barbecue, couldn't have a kiddie pool. I mean, it just goes on. I think there's something like 20 pages of rules. It's pretty funny, really.
Now, and they made you. Did they make you all individually sign on to all these rules?
Oh yes, when you sign your lease.
So, are you planning to essentially present your own set of rules to John Stewart, telling them that?
No, we're just presenting our complaints now. We have different people. We have people at it's like Mercy Housing. It's called Calhafa. We have people at that organization. We have people at John Stewart who don't listen to anything. We have HUD here. We have HUD in Washington. So people are getting it together now to bombard them.
So do I understand that there are 3 different authorities that you're trying to address? John Stewart, Calhafa, whatever that is, and HUD.
HUD.
And it sounds like what's been the size of your meetings the last couple meetings?
Well, the first meeting was really good. It was 35. The second meeting was not, it was like 8. But it was a good meeting, even though it was small. A definite problem was addressed: the people who were being harassed by sound.
And we're talking, this is a problem, this is what I meant by a second category of complaints. This would be complaints not against these 3 agencies, but a way of dealing with problems that have been, or internal problems between the tenants themselves.
Yeah.
And so you're not, it's like saying, we don't need cops, courts, bosses to come in and tell us and to order people around, we're going to work this out ourselves.
We're trying to do this one with mediators.
Huh.
So, anyway, it's really interesting. I'm not sure where it's going to go, if it's going to be real successful. I'm not a union boss, a dear little man who lives here, Basil, who's 90 years old, was the one whose idea it was. He was pretty ferocious about getting it going. So, I just helped him. I was the legs, the mouth, you know.
You are, in fact, rough-tongued Roxanne,
yes.
as I've called
yes.
it. I know we first met years ago at, around City Council, right?
Pardon?
That's where we first met, down
yes.
at City Hall.
Yes.
And I know that you spoke out very strongly against the removal of tenants in the Beach Flats and the Mercy Housing
yeah,
scam.
Yeah, I was living in the Beach Flats at the time.
And have you had any updates on what's happened down there, whether the Nueva Vista project, which was what I guess the Mercy Housing project?
No, I know that, you know, only a fraction of the people are housed, that because there was only something like 30 apartments and there was, 150 tenants before our apartments.
Well, they claimed that they either kicked down 5,000 each to the people that they didn't give first preference to. Or
yeah, I never heard that.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard that, but I never verified it.
Never verified it. Yeah, I mean, I didn't go from room to room verifying it either. I've assumed it to be true, but you got to be careful when you're dealing with Mercy Housing, which I guess disappeared kind of from Santa Cruz.
Or when you deal with the city.
Or when you deal with the Coonerty regime, or I should call it the Martine
yeah.
Bernal regime. He's
right.
really the real power, the city manager in the
right.
city.
So, you know, I don't really know if people really got their housing, if it was successful. I mean, it was just successful, I think, in very, very moderate terms.
Yeah, it was the Dolphin Lee controversy, as I
yeah.
remember. The Dolphin and Lee apartments.
That's funny
were,
that you remember that. I didn't remember that.
I didn't either until a moment ago. But it's, you know, they raised three apartment buildings, the Dolphin apartments, the Lee apartments, and the apartments across the street, and they created far less units, a more modern structure and better units for a smaller number of people.
Yeah.
And that became a cause célèbre for organizing.
I'm sorry, can I ask you to hold on for just 1 second?
Sure, go ahead.
Beatrice.
That became a cause célèbre for organizing. Well, I'll talk over the...
she's leaning over the balcony.
You're trying to both grandchild
well,
care...
Well, I just
at the same
don't
time.
Want to lose a grandchild today.
Well, John Stewart Company might then be profitably sued for that whole... He might make some seed money for your new union.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of pleased. There's been people here who have been racially harassed and... had to go all the way to Washington to get help because, you know, John Stewart is not going to help you here. And so now that we've had the big guys in, I think we might be really have a good chance of being successful.
Now, what was the previous company that was running the place?
You know, I don't know.
But they were better, they were worse, they were the same?
They were better in this way because the manager used to look the other way. You know, if you weren't supposed to have a cat, but you had a cat, it was fine with her. And here they legislate everything. And, you know, try to pull the rules down. You know, you didn't pull the weeds in front of your apartment in the flower box. You're violating section code 33.1. If you do not have it done in 3 days, then we will enact section number 22.2, and, you know, you can expect a 10-day notice.
How do you spell Stewart?
S-T-U-A-R-T, I think. Is John Stewart U-A-R-T or W-A-R-T? E-W-A-R-T.
Huh. As I'm looking them up online to see if there's...
You'll see about 350 suits against them.
Complaint, John Stewart Company, Enough is Enough, Urban Habitat, so-called... it's hard for me to kind of winnow through this, but there seems to be a few...
Yeah, there's quite a few. They're quite hated.
Wow. And do we know how many other properties they run in Santa Cruz?
I think the last I heard they did 350 properties. And, you know, if you think about it, like, we're low-cost housing. There are people who rent condos that John Stewart is the manager of. I mean, they have the same kind of problems, and they own their homes.
Well, apparently they have a Whispering Pines Drive site up in Scotts Valley.
That's their office.
That's their office.
Mm-hmm.
And
John Stewart, I don't know if you remember when the wonderful businesses pulled off Pacific Avenue because they were afraid of the homeless.
That's happening all the time,
well,
actually.
Well, John Stewart was one of the first.
Really?
That pulled up stakes and... The city council made a big deal because, you know, they were such a fantastic business. and we were losing them.
Huh. So. And again, you say they manage 350 properties. What is that, nationwide or citywide?
No, just I think in the city here.
350 properties or 350 people, tenants?
Properties, I believe. That's you can look it all up.
I'm trying. I can't find too much here. But that's interesting. If you get more details, I'd be interested. I think I've heard other complaints about them from other people, but it's...
I'm sure you have.
Wow.
You're going to have to excuse Granny again. Hold on.
And yeah. Granny is trying to take care of the grandchild, apparently.
Don't take anything out of
always
a
double trouble when you're trying to do radio interviews.
Here. Okay, here I am.
So what can people do to support your union? Have you got any, have you got a name? Have you got a logo? Are you selling
T-shirts?
We're just
a mission, what's the name of our person? We're just Mission Gardens Tenants Association right now.
One more time?
Mission Gardens Tenants Association. And I think this is going to end up being pretty much of an inside deal unless we want to have an insurrection. Then we may need help.
Huh.
But for right now, we're just not far enough along, Robert, truthfully.
Well, hopefully this broadcast will serve to pinpoint you so you can be drone bombed in the appropriate way.
Right, so the other five people that are listening.
Yes, actually, we hope there are at least seven.
No, but I really am glad for this chance, and I think that later on, probably, after there's a few more meetings, I'll have more of an idea.
Well, that sounds good. Roxanne, is there any way people can get in touch if they want more information or they want to help out? Do you have an email, a phone
number?
No,
but I'll give out my phone. It's 427-3007. They have an answering machine on, so if I'm not here, they still can leave a message in their number.
Because other groups of people may want to do some tenant organizing, and, I know you're just beginning at this, but you may have some pointers.
Right.
427-3007, we're talking with Roxanne.
Right now, one of the things that's really galling me is that we had a handicapped man here who was really the sweetest man, honestly. He's done more in the community. His name is on plaques all over the community for things that he has volunteered and done for this community. And he has not been allowed to sit on his front porch without a shirt. We only get sun in one place in our front porch. And the front porch was our recessed. You'd have to actually stand right in front of his house and look in to see him not having his shirt on,
Yeah, but does he have an ideal body? I mean, consider that.
It doesn't matter. And he's not like, he's not like fat or anything gross, And he just died. Well, I'm fat. I'm fat and gross. He just died, the other day. Couldn't, for the last year, he hasn't been able to have the sun on his body at his own house.
Wow. So you're going to invite John Stewart Company manager to view the corpse and see the damage?
No, but, people have put out on their front porch, like the one 90-year-old man has a writing desk on his porch. He's always being written up for it. I have a wicker chair and plants. You're not supposed to have anything. You're not supposed to look like it belongs to you,
Well, naturally, you want to keep everything uniform.
Yes. Corporate looking.
Yeah, after all, we are a modern community. This isn't some sort of slum city. Come on.
But it's really sad. You come here and it looks like no one lives here. Well, everyone stays in their houses, closes their blinds.
Well, you are low income people. You are kind of degrading the neighborhood. You know that.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, although you are providing income for John Stewart Company executives as well. Think of it that way.
Yes.
That's the positive side.
So that's probably really all I have to say tonight.
Well, so you intend possibly to have everybody do a protest by sitting on their porch reading a book one of these days?
Naked, yeah.
Naked?
That's what we think.
I'll come with my camera.
Okay.
Roxanne, thank you. And again, if people want more information about John Stewart Company and its latest shenanigans.
I think people need to start deciding for themselves how much people are going to push you around.
Yeah.
Where
you
live.
Can contact Roxanne at 427-3007.
Okay.
Now you may finish your sentence.
Well, that's all. So thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you, Roxanne.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Roxanne, and a current survivor of the John Stewart Apartments over on Mission Gardens Apartments area. It's over on the west side. Let's take a musical break, shall we?
was the year. Seems like yesterday to me. Let me tell you about what happened then. Back in the mine country, we were fighting hard to build a union, 'cause at 40 cents a ton, there was no way to feed a family when the mining day was done. The strike had lasted for a year when they shot down Smiling Sid. He was a lawman who stood up for us miners. That's the only crime he ever did. 100 miners locked up with no trial there in Mingo Town. But the last straw came in Sharples when they gunned the women down. Now we're marching on to Mingo, 10,000 men and counting, here in the hills of West Virginia. Hit the Battle of Blair Mountain. We shouted through the hillsides in every Union hall. We're marching on to Mingo, teach them a lesson once and all. Commandeered every freight train to the Kentucky line. We took every car that crossed our path and all the guns and ammo we could find. The Union leaders tried to stop us. Mother Jones told us to turn back, but we had learned ourselves from the gun thugs. There's a time to talk and a time to attack. We had no leader. We didn't need one. We all knew our way through Logan County. We all knew once we got there, we're gonna hang the sheriff Chapin from a sour apple tree. We're marching on to Mingo, 10,000 men and counting, here in the hills of West Virginia. At the Battle of Blair Mountain. Nights we fought them, the front was 10 miles wide. Every cop and scab in West Virginia was there on the other side. They dropped explosives from their airplanes, such a thing you never saw. They shot us with machine guns, it was the operator's law. We dug trenches and wore helmets that we brought from the Argonne. All the way from France to Logan, we fought from dusk to dawn. President Harding sent in the army, and we left our line to them. But the hills of West Virginia will long remember when. Here in the hills of West Virginia, at the Battle of Blair Mountain.
Yeah, that was the Battle of Blair Mountain, again, from David Rovick's Troubadour album, People's History and Song. He's got a lot of linear notes, which are rather hard to read. I'm going to try reading a little from his discussion of some of the background of that, because I hadn't heard of the Battle of Blair Mountain before, which is perhaps the reason that he wrote these songs. Miners had been on strike for a year, living through the freezing West Virginia winter in tents. Regularly, and then some of this is hard to read, apparently being shot at by the company's hired thugs. 100 striking miners were being held indefinitely with no trial in jail in the town of Mingo when a popular pro-union deputy, Sid Hatfield, was shot by thugs in broad daylight. on the courthouse steps, this was the last straw. Against the advice of the union leadership, 13,000 miners and many more supporters set out to lay siege to the town of Mingo and liberate their comrades. They looted provisions, guns, and ammunition from the usurious company's stores as they went, hijacking trains and private cars to get them where they were going. The venerable and beloved labor leader Mary Mother Jones arrived on the scene, beseeching the miners to reconsider their actions. Many were convinced to turn back, but the word got around that a number of women and children had been massacred in the town of Sharpies by company thugs, and the miners turned back around and resumed their march toward Mingo. In the face of the approaching army of miners, the more well-to-do elements of the West Virginia society mobilized to defend Mingo. All 500 of West Virginia's police force were there, along with thousands more doctors, lawyers, scabs, and whoever they could find who identified with the mine owners as opposed to the miners. The two sides took up positions on either side of a mountain valley. For 3 days and nights, they shot at each other from across the valley. The foliage was so thick, nobody could see what they were aiming at. Most men on both sides of the valley were veterans of World War I. This all happened again in 1921. And all knew far too well the terrible bloodbath that would inevitably result from either side storming the lines of the other. Neither side did that, and thus the total number of fatalities was estimated to be around 16, with many more injured. With no particular leadership structure, women from the mining camps very effectively organized medical care and food to maintain the front. During the course of the siege, planes were sent from military bases outside West Virginia. Many of them crashed when attempting to land in the mountainous region. Those that managed to get to Mingo dropped bombs on the lines of the miners, but the only bombs that exploded did so in the absence of any people, so no one was hurt in this attempt to kill the miners using air power. And again, we're talking 1921, so it must have been fairly primitive air power, though we did have, of course, the Red Baron in World War I and so forth. The siege ended when thousands of federal troops arrived, who at least made a pretense of acting as a neutral arbiter of the situation, relieving both sides of their positions and eventually telling everyone to go home now. In the ensuing years, laws would be changed and efforts would be made to imprison at least some of those who had taken part in the rebellion, but no jury in the entire state of West Virginia would convict the rebel miners. And that, again, is those are the linear notes from the Battle of Blair Mountain, 1921. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And the name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. In the studio with me, we have a special treat. In the studio, we have that a famous political activist, perhaps soon to become a political prisoner, Lighthouse Linda LeMaster. Hey there, Linda.
Hi, Robert. Don't remind me about the possibilities of jail.
As long as you brought your police report with you, all will be well.
I didn't bring it here.
You're going to get it. So, Linda and I have a little ongoing sort of back and forth about her police report.
She likes to pickle me.
I insist she bring one of these days, because that's when we'll be able to help her most.
Get your own police report.
Indeed. I hope never to have another police report. Thank you very much. So you said, Linda, you heard some of Roxanne's interview with me,
yeah,
about the John Stewart Company, and maybe you have no. And you mentioned, you noticed, I mean, I remember you said that, because I know you were around when we were doing the activists were trying to make sure that Mercy Housing didn't sweep away the tenants' union that formed to defend the Dolphin and Lee tenants, and actually they did sweep them away, but that's another story. But you were pointing out to me that Mercy Housing is still active in the county of Santa Cruz?
Yes, there's a lot of projects. I looked at three of them because, as you know, I was trying to find a new home recently. that are in the city of Santa Cruz, you know about Neri Lagoon and their offices there. There's a new apartment. I think it's for seniors only. There may be other restrictions. And it's called Grace Commons, which is about a block from your old stomping grounds with the porta potty on Hanover on the east side. And I looked at another one. I'm trying to think where it was. There's another one downtown. I'm forgetting the name of it. But
so they're still around. What about John Stewart Company? Do you know much about John Stewart Company? Are they?
I don't know a lot, but I think it's been a relatively short haul that they've become this Goliath scale property management company. And they're also my new landlords.
Oh, ho.
And so I just signed this almost 40-page lease with all the don'ts and don'ts.
Are you allowed to sit on your front porch with
a
chair?
Oh, no, not only topless. I can't even go out in my pajamas.
No, so no pajamas.
They're crazy. I mean, why do they say in the lease my pajamas? My pajamas are more opaque than some of my play clothes.
You're wearing a rather...
yeah, holes in it. Sorry.
Sort of threadbare outfit there. Actually looks kind of nice. But so, yeah, so John Stewart does have more properties around. And this is a low-income place you're living in, right?
The place I live is for people over age 55 and low income. And I don't think it's a requirement, but they need to have a certain number of people that are low income, I mean, truly poor of the government standard. And then it's affordable housing for the rest of the people, which is still kind of poor, still eligible for Medi-Cal and Medicaid. But it's, people with 10 times the income I have are eligible, but then there's a ceiling. If you make over $60,000 a year,
so you're being snubbed by the richer elements of your apartment complex.
I don't know all my neighbors yet. I've been hiding my funky-looking car from all of them so they can have some other first impression.
I'll have to bring my car over and spoil
please not.
Your...
please not.
Blow your cover, yeah.
I would like to meet my new neighbors with the least amount of prejudice as possible.
It is developing its traditional bumper sticker outbreak, which has become, shall we say, a regular feature of my vehicles.
Last time I saw it, it looked great from the front end, like all the cars silver and shaped like, these compact sedans. But from the rear end, it looks like a Robert car.
It's depends on how you view it, I guess. So you I know that there's with Gary Johnson and Ed Fry out of jail for their appeal on these lodging law convictions that happened in Judge Gallagher's court. You are facing yourself a trial. We've talked about it before on the air. And I guess a pretrial is coming up in the end of this month. Any news to report? Anything you're looking for from the community? Any new insights on what's going on?
New insights. I don't know about new insights. Most of the new things sound more like rumors. But the old insights are pretty scary. It seems to be shaping up that this lodging law that seems such a surprise to people from Peace Camp who were getting the tickets just a year ago now, it's being sampled and trialed in other places, like, as we read a couple examples of in Steve Argue's Indy Bay article. And I talked with Ed about that yesterday morning, very recently morning.
Attorney Ed Fry.
Yeah, Ed, he was in jail for 2 weeks because he couldn't pay $50,000 bail for having slept on the lawn in front of the court.
That was a typographical error. They actually meant $110. It was a mistake on their part.
It wasn't a mistake,
and
the judge didn't apologize.
Certainly. We can't blame our judges for being a little nearsighted, perhaps.
Yes, we can.
Well, that's a strange coincidence that both the DA and the judge were equally nearsighted. Maybe it was a misprint. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
No, I have to go in front
goodness.
Of this judge. He needs to
this
wake up before the next trial.
This is the kind of vicious, hard-hearted activists we have in today's world. No wonder they're trying to put them away. I don't know what to say.
Put them away. Yeah. I think that there's no sense at all coming through the mouths of the judges in the county building. They're either out of touch or desperate in some other way we don't quite understand.
I think they're just doing business as usual because...
No, they're doing business as usual on steroids. Because I watched that court between 8:30 and 10:30, and this Judge John Gallagher's court, and all he is seems to do is picking people's pockets. And the people whose pockets he's picking are people in their 20s, largely, occasionally a teenager or someone in their mid-30s, but mostly young people who don't have anything in their pockets. So they walk out of there like it's just a money mill, and if they don't have money, they get to pay even more because they can't pay it now.
Yeah, but John has a very persuasive and comradely rap about he is really an employee of the system, and the system is working for the people, and he wants to he will reveal all his holdings to anybody who wants to know. He makes a kind of a preliminary speech, unusual for judges, which initially sort of struck me as interesting. But then, of course, when I saw the way he treated defendants,
it became clear
it was simply sort of a cover story. At least that's how I began to view it.
I liked what he said. He sets it up as if you expect even the courts to recognize that we live in a democracy. And that's so refreshing, but that's not how he behaved.
Well, courts aren't supposed to behave that way. They implement the law, if you don't mind, Lemaster.
Yeah, but the law is a turnip blood combine. They just have a give-me-your-money kind of mentality, and they expect everybody else to make deals because they're so used to it, you know? And there's no room for anything like what actually happened in this situation.
How are the public defenders? Have you had any conversations with them? They've been helpful in this case at all. I know you have a volunteer attorney, an appointed attorney, Jonathan Gettleman, is getting paid.
He's not appointed. He volunteered.
He volunteered.
He's pro bono. And one thing we're working on is trying to see if, even though he's not the PD assigned by the same judge, if I might be eligible to get access to court records, like a part of the transcript of the trial.
Well, if the public defender is eligible, I don't see why he wouldn't be. I mean,
I don't either, but we haven't heard back yet.
And also, I don't see why he wouldn't accept appointment as a public defender because,
the problem is the judge.
Judge doesn't want to appoint
him. He would. I mean, he was the one asking for that.
Judge doesn't want to appoint him.
And both, and I
should. Judge doesn't want to pay him. That's interesting.
I don't mean to single out Gallagher in terms of the money policing of young people. No, I'm trying to say it looked to me like they're all doing that. All the judges that are taking these 8:30 things where people just need to get out of their ticket and try to get back to work are taking advantage of people in terms of long-term financial debt. You know? I mean, like, here's an example. I watched some guy who had to make restitution to some other guy because he whacked his car. He went two different times and beat up his car. I can't say too much about it because it's not fair to reveal what could blow his cover. But, you know, in addition to the restitution, there's the court fees. There's an extra charge if you have to make payments because you can't just yank hundreds or thousands of dollars out of your pocket. There's all these other fees. You have to pay for a probation officer if you're deemed employable. And it doesn't count if you're unemployed. You have to show you're poor. And if you're unemployed and you can't show you're poor, they just assume you're making minimum wage times 40 hours a week. That's insane. And then I don't see how it doesn't play out into being a creating debtor's prison.
Can you pick this kind of up just by watching while waiting for your case to come up?
And thinking. I guess I was thinking on the job again. Yeah, I watch the same thing in Rebecca Connolly's court. They're both relatively young judges.
One and two. One is Connolly, two is Gallagher, for those who want to check out whether Linda is simply voicing her prejudices or actually giving what you might agree with, too, if you watch the court proceedings on a typical day.
Well, I'm entitled to my prejudice, Robert. The Sentinel has their prejudice. The DA has her prejudice. The judge has cookie-wielding prejudice in every direction.
Cookie-wielding prejudice?
Yeah, he brings cookies to the jurors to make sure they're happy and content during the trial.
Very interesting.
You know, one bag labeled Emily's and the other labeled Pacific
Emily's. Emily Riley, the former anti-homeless mayor. My goodness, how these people do mingle with each other.
But they did get their free ad in front of the jurors and
yeah,
shoves.
How nice. Well, Linda, I think what I'm going to do is proceed to play some more from the June 18th anti-war demonstration. We just heard a long interview from Sandino talking about how the Brown Berets brought the issue of Ryan Coonerty's civil liberties free behavior at city council around the immigrants issue to the attention of his students, and also confronted Coonerty, although, as I said, strangely enough, they didn't post Coonerty's response, which I think was a glaring error on the part of Indy Bay. Indy Bay has a problem at, or maybe it's the people who did the editing and posted on Indy Bay. I know that,
maybe he muttered.
Perhaps. But I haven't heard. I think that if had that been the case, we might have heard that from Sandino, who gave us that information. Let's hear a little more, and if you have any thoughts on any of this, please let me know. We can.
Can I tell you something before you start?
Sure. Stop the tape, and you can comment then.
Okay. I wrote something on my blog, which sort of like a reverie, remembering being at peace camp. So I wanted to ask you in particular for feedback, since you know what it's about.
And your blog, of course, is Linda's Hearth.
Hearthbylinda.blogspot.com.
Hearthbylinda.blogspot.com is where you can go to get more information about this three-month-long protest that you were a significant part of, Linda, as well as, of course, the actual blogspot. I guess it's peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. And then there's Becky Johnson's Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com. And if I go too fast with any of this, or you actually want to actually look up this stuff rather than sort of nod and move on, you can give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will get back to you and give you, repeat for you, these details. Let's continue, though, with listening to June 18th and how things were at the Capitol recruiting station with the slim turnout, but the people who were still there wielding signs urging a little rationality, sanity, and an end to the international murder that goes on this evening as we speak on this broadcast. Compliments of President Obama.
We're talking with Brian on a Sunday morning, June 19th. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
And actually, we moved on from the peace rally of June 18th. These are just more interviews coming up, and perhaps you have something to say about them, Linda. Who knows?
We had a sign, willing to work, anything helps, a couple of backpacks. How's life treating you outside?
Oh, I'm getting harassed by the the maintenance men inside the Palomar Hotel.
And what exactly has happened here, and when did this happen?
He considered my sign bullshit and saying that I could find places to go put my stuff to look for work, and but without being a secure place for my stuff, it's I don't trust anyone with my gear.
Did he offer you a place perhaps in the hotel?
No.
Did he offer you a job perhaps as a worker in the hotel?
No.
Did he give you a, should we say, treat you to a meal because he saw you looked a little hungry?
No, he called me bullshit and my line, and my sign.
So did you file a charge against him for abusive language?
No, but I will be.
It's kind of hard. It's hard to file a charge. He has the First Amendment. But if he's abusing you, if he's threatening you, that's an assault. Did he threaten you?
No.
And so what did the police come and take any action?
No.
So it was just the management of the hotel?
Yes.
What's his name, do you know?
I have no idea.
Next time he does that, say, can you tell me your name, sir, so I can quote you later?
Yes, I will.
Hey, Brian, is it okay if I put this on the radio?
Sure.
Thanks a lot. We've been talking with
Brian Lateek.
Thanks, Brian. We're talking with
Dirk.
And Dirk, you say this morning you had a little wake-up call.
Yes. Please do a job that we all want, but we hate.
And what job is that? Making sure you get up early to go to work?
Wake me up at 7:10 so I can go to the bathroom by 7:30.
Where were you? Or is it a secret location where you were?
Yeah, right by the church. And sanctuary.
Were there a number of other people there or just you?
Well, there were, but...
How many would you say?
The cops got them and then I stayed.
And how many police came to give you this fine wake-up call?
One cop, three pens, and two tickets.
And did you get tickets?
I got a backpack full of tickets.
Really? How many tickets, let's say, in the last few months?
I've got 14 tickets this year. I've been to jail 8 times this year.
And what were you in jail for?
Harassment. They're harassing me.
Right, but what did they charge you with?
Dude, you can't smoke in public, you can't drink in public, and you can't camp in public.
So in other words, you're a criminal smoker, drinker, and camper. Is that what you're trying to say here?
No, I'm trying to say I'm homeless.
Oh, that's the same thing. Come on, man. Again, we've been talking with...
Dirtier.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
You take care.
Have a great morning, and I'm glad to share with the world.
Indeed. Come on the air in about an hour and a half.
Puff
Okay, we're here at the ongoing second week of the protest to free Gary Johnson and Ed Fry, two people being held in jail for convicted of lodging. Yes. And we have a merry band of four men, yes. And you can hear the crowd going wild here. Actually, that's our sound effects man, Steve Argue. He's creating quite a stir over on the side. There are signs at Free Attorney Ed Fry and the Sleeping Band. Sleeping is not struck out a crime, because of course it is a crime, because
it is
that's what Fry and Johnson are in county jail for across the street. I'm talking, however, with the organizer of the protest.
Take those steps a little easier. We need you, okay? We need you. We need you.
And there he is, the erstwhile and smiling but ever rapid, not too much time to talk, Doug Fox, who's on his way into court and away from any actual homeless civil liberties concerns.
Doug Fox is a public defender.
Flyer.
He took a flyer, and he took a dive to many years ago and never came back. But let's not criticize attorneys for being attorneys, because that's what they are, attorneys.
He took a dive.
In fact, that's the only time they seem to be concerned, is when one of their number is in jail, and then all they do is go tisk, tisk, and wait a week to take it to court. It's your usual approach. Anyway, so you yourself have been having some direct contact with former Lieutenant Joe Habee. What happened there?
Herpes, Hades, other people call him Herpes, Habee's, Habeas Corpus.
Let's not descend to adolescent name-calling.
Okay. No name-calling, except for fuck you. Anyway, he came by this morning and woke me up, and so I had to maneuver my vehicle so that he...
You live in your RV.
Yes.
With a wife who has cancer.
Yeah, with a wife that has cancer and goes cancer.
She's in the hospital right now, right?
Therapy, and I have to take her to the hospital today because she's been throwing up a lot, and...
AB knows this.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't give a fuck. Fuck that guy. Anyway.
Want a fireman?
Yeah,
you live in your vehicle, and there are no places, of course, for shelter for such folks.
You know, and, of course, we could be harassed any time, but, you know, being woken up at 5:30 in the morning, especially when you're doing a protest at 7:30, really sucks.
Indeed. I can appreciate that. I myself reluctantly came to this particular protest.
Reluctantly, you could. Thank you very much for your support.
Oh, for sure. I'd be happy to put in 5 minutes of every day. Yes, reluctant, as it was.
Guy, you're fired.
I quit. I'm all right.
You quit. I quit.
So, former Lieutenant Joe Habee, now an enforcement, vehicle enforcement guy, who's supposed to stop people from storing vehicles on the street, is improperly going after you because you live in your vehicle and you move it around.
Not only that, he goes after any vehicle that is a motorhome on the streets, whether you're visiting Santa Cruz or not, and harasses you and tells you got to move. This is the Santa Cruz Police Department. You need to move your vehicle. If we come back in 15 minutes, we'll tow your vehicle.
And you haven't responded. This is the Santa Cruz citizenry. We're observing inappropriate action under color of law. If you don't desist, we're taking you to court.
I respond as go fuck off.
An epithet.
I love this guy.
You love Steve.
Just
the beginning of a polyamorous, meaningful relationship.
He's there. He's over here. I'm looking at him. I love him.
Actually, we have four people here today: Steve, Casey, you, me.
Yes.
And
but it's been.
And we should explain that this is a protest that went on for 2 weeks in front of the county courthouse, urging freedom from four Gary Johnson and Ed Fry, who were at that time in jail on the county jail or at the farm, different times there in both places. And they were released, probably not because of our protestations, though maybe to some extent. Linda's got some thoughts on that.
I think that the lawyers were just doing the tisk-tisk thing you mentioned earlier, who work in that building, until Crow and Casey and those guys are talking about got there. And it caused them to engage out loud, and I think it really was the catalyst or the starter.
Well, it is true that Peter Leeming did take on the case and went down to, and found, did the research that enabled Gallagher to suddenly discover his reading glasses and find that the actual bail was not $50,000 but $110. Quite a discovery, actually.
Yeah.
It's been on and off with other people here coming to
every
support.
Morning since that's a Monday
a
week ago.
An on and off thing with different people, but Casey's been here constantly. You've been on and off, and you've been here today, and I've been here every day, whether I'm cognizant or not.
But you're here, and you have your sign, free attorney at Fry.
I just had a bad night,
which is
last
good.
Night.
It's all right. Well, I can understand. I don't want to be woken up by police officers banging on my house.
It's not even that. It's just a bad night, you know. So, I'm not the perfect human being. So.
We won't get into your perfections and your imperfections at this
thank
time,
you. Very
bro.
Good.
That could be a long discussion.
Yeah.
Anything
yeah,
further before I cut you off and
actually.
Move along? Mr. talks too much for his own good.
Yeah, goodbye.
Take care. Steve Argue, you're here today to support this protest. You yourself have been an observer as well as a participant in many protests in the past decade or more. In fact, you yourself were jailed for defending a woman at a protest 11 years ago. 12 years ago, actually. 11 years ago. 12 years ago.
Yeah.
12 years ago. In 1999.
This guy right here?
Just across the river from where we're standing.
Peace. You don't know.
Yeah. And that was another war that was being fought by a Democratic administration. The same Democratic, actually. Well, Obama has the audacity of hope. Clinton had the, what did he have? In any case, what's your...
He had a...
I don't have the balls to do that.
Nothing.
You're a little tired this morning, too. I can see that. But you're here...
I haven't got my coffee yet.
And we're about to go get coffee and retire from this. But this protest is happening, I guess, by the time this airs. Crow, do you intend to do this for the rest of the week? Or are you going to abandon...
I'm going to be here till Friday.
You will be here till Friday. So there should be a protest tomorrow morning if Thursday is today.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Today actually is Tuesday. But
unless I keep it fried, then
perhaps... Yeah, if I keep it fried, we're going to be here. I don't know about the other guy. You know,
Gary Johnson. He's just a homeless guy. Nobody cares about him.
Oh, no.
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, it's attorneys that count in this business, as we know it.
It's the attorneys that count. We're here for the attorneys.
That's right.
Only here
and
for
they're
the
here for us. Or maybe not, is the case. If you have enough money, they're here for you. Let's put it that way. It's always a problem. Right?
The light is on the subject now.
Now we're gonna end this before we completely discredit ourselves in the eyes of potential supporters.
All right. Did you have any questions for me?
Yes, I did. What do you think of this whole foolishness, Steve? Why weren't you here a week ago? And what's the matter with you? And what?
Well, I just got done with a quarter at UCSC, so that's part of why I wasn't here last week. It was quite a quarter. I was sick for quite a while. So, and then,
oh, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, and then I was catching up. Anyway, I came down today, and I'm going to put together an article on this subject and get it around, speak out against what they're doing, and for freeing Ed Fry, for freeing Gary Johnson, and for ending the sleeping ban, and for a society that's more sane, that provides housing to people.
Here. I know that you ran as part of that platform on two different occasions in 2000 and 2002 for city council.
Right.
And since that time, have you observed any changes that have given you cause for optimism in the city?
Oh, no. It's getting worse, I think.
Well, there you are, the sunny day summer report. And actually, it's a hot day today. It looks like it's going to be some reports. I'm told by my confreres here that it's going to be more than 90 degrees. So luckily, I'm going indoors soon.
Does he look like he wants a flyer?
Thank you.
He really look like he wants a flyer?
Never heard sweat.
And there you are. This is the colloquy from the courthouse. Your man signing off.
June 21st,
2011.
So
we have a year and a half old report, folks, which you probably heard.
I told you anyway.
Which I think was told to me a year and a half ago, actually, which I broadcast then. Crow, you say that you yourself have some indication that either a take-back Santa Cruzian member of that group, or at least someone masquerading as a take-back Santa Cruzian, gave a special attention to one of your tires in a helpful attempt to assist you in getting new tires.
Oh, yeah. There was a guy who I identified later on who harassed us about a year and a half ago, who put a nail through plywood and said, "Take back Santa Cruz," underneath our tires. I eventually noticed it. Unfortunately, the person across the street who drove over the plywood got a hole in his tire, which was a decent-looking vehicle, unlike mine and Panther's. It was...
You have RVs, right?
Yeah, it was a newer RV that actually got the tire punctured because he took off in the morning. But I noticed it in the morning underneath Panther's RV and my RV, which are school buses at the time.
It's confiscated by the police.
Well, mine's since confiscated under its own demise. But Panther's still around down in L.A. But anyway, I noticed it under our tires, and that's when I figured out that these people who are Take Back Santa Cruz night thing, Majerus is going a little AWOL.
At least that was what it's actually written on the piece of plywood.
On the piece of plywood. You know, and it may have not had been any part to do with Take Back Santa Cruz, but the person basically, you know, wrote down on a piece of plywood with a nail, "Take Back Santa Cruz." So,
you never contacted Annalisa Cube to find out if in fact she was responsible.
The person who actually put the nails under the tire, he threatened us, and I threatened him, and nothing came about it because at the time I was talking with you on the phone.
So that winds it up for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'll be shooting the next broadcaster, but I didn't bring my gun with me, so oh well. Coming up next is From the Cream to the Dregs, and you will get a complete introduction to that subject by Mr. Duck, or R. Duck, as some know him.
Everybody's.
Who's going to tell you exactly why Dennis is malingering and hiding somewhere else, not coming to his show as he should be, sneaking off into the bushes, and, he'll give you the whole story. I'll be back on Sunday, unless I get a wise up and learn something better, 9:30 in the morning with another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. If anything has occurred to you during the show that you want to pass on to me, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, particularly if you see any instances of police abuse. In fact, call Free Radio and talk about them on the air if you see them. That's something that the Free Radio Collective actually voted in at one of its secret Stalinist subcommittee meetings, and they will, in fact, let you talk about the issue, or they should, on those rare occasions when we actually have broadcasters in the studio. You can also get involved with Free Radio by going to www.freakradio.org and downloading an application. You can learn the schedule there. You can find some archives. It's an interesting website. Check it out. You can also, of course, listen to the show from freakradio.org. I now say good night and thank you for listening. And I introduce the distinguished and probably far more computer literate R. Duck.
Yeah, I was just going to, say a little hello and greetings, and certainly apologies for the substitution of the expected Uncle Dennis, who is unexpected this week as well as next week. So you can expect to not expect him in the next bunch of hours as well as the next bunch of hours. and a whole nother week next week. I think possibly next week we'll have good old Wilson in giving us a hand with his collection of conveniently located and recorded live recordings of music throughout the mostly northern hemisphere. wide variety of rock and roll and hippie punk, hippie rock, electronic rock, and other goodies. But for now, you're stuck with my interpretation of what I think any of those things might be. The host of the R Duck Show, I have a have my backup support over there of Mountain Tiger. We'll get her over here in front of the mics and stuff if we can make her a little less shy coming up. And you are tuned into FRSC, some of the finest radio available in Santa Cruz. We bid adieu. Robert Norse heading out for the evening. Hope you enjoyed his program as it comes to you each week at around the time that it was before now when it wraps up. But earlier in the day, it starts around 6 p.m. And again, you can hear more at 9:30 a.m. on Sundays. Check it out. All that you need to know about very local Santa Cruz issues and concerns and less than issues. Some of it's just fine news. So check it out when you get a chance. If you already heard it, then you already know. But those that don't know, they can learn by tuning in to FRSC, Foaming Radio in Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.1 FM. FRSC, streaming at freakradio.org. Give us a call if you'd like, 831-427-3772. We'll get you right here into the nerve center of the program. And all FRSC activities, and if there's someone here, I bet they'll answer it, because we crave attention and desire to know that someone might actually be tuned in. Very exciting when that happens. And I'm no exception to that little rule, as well as my guest in the studio.